Better on Draft podcast is recorded live in Detroit Sound Studios in Royal Oak, Michigan.
Now, pop that 40 and kick back with your hosts, Dan, Nick, Ken, Rob, and Matt.
And we are live, episode number 83 of the Better on Draft podcast. My name is Ken, and quite a different aroma we have in this room tonight.
It's the Better on Pizza podcast.
The Better on Pizza podcast. You'll notice exactly why we have pizza in the studio in a minute. My name is Ken, and right now I'm actually not drinking any beer. I'm drinking a nice whiskey and Verner's. That actually looks really good.
It's a 7 and 7, Ken.
It's a 7 and 7.
Oh, no, it's a highball, I believe they call it. I'm sorry.
Verner's and Tullamore Dew. Yeah. So yeah, it's a highball because 7 and 7, 7 Up, and
Seagram's
technically. So yeah,
if you can form
highball, are you like a 14-year-old girl?
Hey,
no, I'm an 8-year-old man.
Just because I like it doesn't mean my, you know. Just,
hey, if you like it, it's a good drink.
Yeah, if you like it, it's a good drink. You know, I've had Limeritas on the show. This is nothing less or more. I had a lot of bad beer thanks to Matt on the show.
Oh, you've got worse.
Oh no. I hope the taste buds of our guests are going through. But what are you drinking over there? Edward 40 Hams.
Yeah, you know, Dan hasn't been here in a while, so I figured I'd pick up the 40-ouncer slack. I got a big old bottle of Busch Diesel.
Busch Diesel? That's actually a brand of Busch?
Well, it's not Busch Light.
No.
So it's Busch Heavy. Or.
Gotcha. I see what you did there.
But I'm cutting it with my Di Verner.
It's not Busch like Busch E85. It's like Busch Premium Unleaded.
Yeah, this is Busch Busch Heavy.
Busch Heavy.
Busch Definitely Heavy. Whatever the opposite of Busch Light is. So we're going to pour
dark.
Out a little bit for Dan.
Opposite of light, dark?
Yeah. But I think Busch had a Dunkel at one point, so.
I don't know.
About that.
They've had a lot of different. Didn't they used to have an Amber, too?
Was it?
Or they had a Shandy.
No, they had a Copper.
The Copper, there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, Copper Signature, yeah. The
how was that? I assume you had it.
I never opened it. I saw it. They tried to put it as the craft version of Busch, which was just kind of a oxymoron in and of itself.
Is that like when Amberbach comes out and just like, hey, it's Amberbach?
Or when you put Amberbach on tap at an Applebee's and it just sits there so long that the termites eat the handle?
I've never seen that.
Okay, well, it's just,
that's a real
no, but it's just nobody ever drinks Amberbach. So
I tell you what, there's a bar in Madison Heights that I used to go to, and during their happy
hour,
is it
called Augie's A?
No, it's the Madison Club.
Okay,
and they would have during their happy hour, it'd be like $1.75 pints of Amberbach, and we would just Dan and I would go there like at well, it'd be my lunch. He would be getting off work, and like have 5 beers each.
Yeah, I used to call in Applebee's, the one over by Oakland U, and they said, oh, we're mandated. You know, we have to have, 40% AB products, 40% Miller products, and then we can have a couple of locals. They had 10 taps, so 4, 4, and 2.
Okay.
And I said, and your best selection was Amberbach? And I was probably calling on the Applebee's for 6 months, and they didn't turn that keg once.
Was that was back in your powers days,
those
right?
Those were back in my powers days, yes. Feel the powers.
Angela, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just living the post-college dream.
Graduate, Angela.
Graduate.
Eating pizza every day, drinking and watching Netflix.
I thought that was during college dream.
That wasn't my college dream.
You didn't eat pizza, drink, and watch Netflix during college?
I did not watch enough Netflix when I was in school.
Now that you have all this extra
hardly
time.
Hardly any. Yeah, you know, I should be job searching, but I'm knee-deep in Netflix right now.
Well, you don't want to say that on air, you know, sponsor and all.
Who wants to leave Brown Iron Brewing
House? No. I love them. They love me. That's not what's going on.
One of our sponsors, Brown Iron Brew House.
At 27 in Van Dyke in Washington Township. Go there. If you love your mother but hate to cook, they have a great brunch Monday.
They have the brunch
Still
Monday.
Still some Sunday. Tickets available on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Not many people celebrate brunch Mondays, let alone.
Love your mother, hate cooking, but do love beer. There are still tickets available at Brown Iron Brew House for the Mother's Day brunch on Sunday.
You guys should have a brunch Monday, though, for those guys who forget about it. And then they're like, hey, we could do brunch Monday.
Better yet, we have our Bell's dinner on Monday.
Bell's, so if you, do you still have tickets for
we
that?
We do. So if you screw up real bad on Sunday, just bring her and get some Black Note on Monday. 6:30, $55 a person.
What year Black Note? Last year? Or this year, I should say?
2016.
Okay, so that would be last year.
I don't. Did they do a 17 already?
I thought they released 17, unless they just had release dates of Black Note. I thought people went crazy to go to Kalamazoo. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know either. I don't. I mean,
it all blends together.
Yeah, it's been such a blur trying to get through the last semester that the people are getting Black Note. I didn't know about it.
I'm not even in school, and I'm just like, eh. You know, beer release here, beer it's release dark beer, there. Right?
I'm gonna guess.
Yeah,
I'm not really interested.
Dark beer, heavy, very, in my eyes, overrated. I've had plenty more barrel-aged beers that are just a lot better.
Dark beer is just kind of, eh.
Yeah, you've started to grow more accustomed to dark beers.
Yeah, but especially those, oh my God, you have to try this dark beer. I'm like, eh. Kind of like you are with IPAs, though. Oh my God, you have to try this IPA. You're like, or I don't.
All right. Well, I'll try it, and then I'll just give you the rest of it saying thank you anyways. Well, when you don't like dark beers, you don't like the chewy kind, like the really heavy duty, or because you like the bourbon, that bourbon heat.
Not really, no.
You don't like the bourbon heat.
I don't like the mouthfeel of a thick beer, which typically the dark beers are. Beers that are more like portery, that are lighter and crisper, are okay, but it's just the combination of the mouthfeel, the viscosity, and the bitterness kind of do a no thanks for me.
Well, we do have guests in the studio today. Return guest Aaron from Blue Note Beverage. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How's life over in the are you technically in the distribution or
kind of floating in between like a fourth tier?
A fourth tier. So yeah. Is that like fourth meal from Taco Bell? Like you're the only one of your kind that exists
right now? Yeah.
You're like tier adjacent.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't either. Put in that word and everyone just says yes.
Yeah, Jason. Yeah, I mean,
you're just looking for the easy, like, oh, yeah, and then not even talk about it for the rest of the time. Have
exactly.
Everyone try to figure out what is tier adjacent. I mean, it's kind of like adjacent to the second tier in the sense to where he doesn't brew and he doesn't sell.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, kind of. I don't brew,
like,
but I do a little bit of selling. Well, you know, I do work with retail and I work with the breweries directly. And I work with the distributors, so kind of work with everybody.
Your first, second, and third tier.
First, second, and third tier.
Sixth that could be tier all together.
So, real quick, what is Blue Note? What I guess
put it in a nutshell. It's a consulting firm for small to medium sized craft breweries right now.
And you were in a couple weeks ago, about 6 weeks ago, and I was off. Is that right?
Yeah, he was the Artisan XL.
Got it.
Yep. Yeah,
that's why you've never met each other.
Yeah, and I think I brought in too much beer.
No such thing.
No,
I brought in too much beer for me.
Yeah, I think either last week was a challenge that we had with all the beer that we had, or the week that Redline came in and brought like 8 howlers of beer, and there wasn't that many of us that night. So we're just like, oh, this is gonna be fun. So, but we did have you helped us because our guest canceled tonight. So you brought us 2 guests, local, very prominent in the Detroit brewing industry. We have the founder of Motor City Brew Works. Was it Greg? Right?
John.
Damn it! That's the second
prominent
time.
Prominent John.
Prominent John. I should remember John. I'm overthinking everything. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right. So you are the founder of Motor City Brew Works.
Mm-hmm.
When did Motor City Brew Works get founded?
1994.
So that's 23 years.
Okay.
Do you have like a number associated with like what craft beer or brewery number that you were in the state or?
Yeah, technically, I think we were the first. Well, you know, we changed licenses. Originally, we were a brewer's license. And then we changed over to microbrewery.
Okay.
In 99. But we were one of the first. Bell's was 1988. And then we came out of Detroit and Mackinac was the previous. That was the company I worked for and occupied the building that we have now, which is much different than it was back then. So Detroit and Mackinac was 92 to 94. And then Motor City was 94 to present.
That's pretty good because, I mean, you're talking 92, and the only company that I could think of that consistently had turnover, at least in this area, because, I mean, Traffic Jam had been there, I think, even longer, correct?
Well, no, they came about at the exact same time.
Okay.
I used to work for Ben Edwards, who was the original owner of the Traffic Jam.
Okay.
And he in one of my jobs, and this was 1988, we constructed the shell of what was to become Detroit and Mackinac and what is now Motor City. And that was we were doing that to try to get a brew pub license for the Traffic Jam. So we built the building and got the federal approval, but we couldn't get the state license at that time because brew pub legislation hadn't come into existence, and brew pubs were illegal in Michigan up until 92.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So Tom Burns was Ben's lawyer back then, and Tom had actually gone to school on the West Coast, got his law degree at the Lewis and Clark Law School. So he was working for Carhartt Brewing, a lot of the first-generation breweries on the West Coast. So when he moved back to Michigan, he read about Ben challenging the state, trying to get the legislation through to allow him to brew beer for his restaurant. And Tom took over the legal end of that case. And in the end, the legislation did go through, but it didn't help us very much because the brewery was not under the same license, under the same roof as the Class C license. So Tom started Detroit and Mackinac, and then I went over and helped Tom get that going.
Wow.
And then Tom had a recurrence of cancer about a year and a half into it. So we never really had a chance to get the company off the ground. And after his passing and the investors had taken the Detroit Mackinac brand down to Oldenburg for contract brewing, that's when I started Motor City Brewing Works.
Okay. That's quite a history.
Yeah, you got it? You got it? You ready for the test?
All right.
So, I mean, that's kind of almost kind of like a baptism of where Metro Detroit and kind of Southeast Michigan brewing started almost.
Well, craft starting, because obviously you're talking brewing within Detroit area, you know.
Well, you're right. I mean, Larry Bell was doing it 10 years before.
But on the west side, right?
On the west side. And then there was the Chelsea Brewing Company, which didn't last long.
Beer Guyver, right?
Brew Guyver?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I thought he was over there helping.
Well, he's done like 70 like installs in regards to assistance and helping breweries get off the ground.
But, yeah, I mean, the very first wave would have been, you know, Traffic Jam was brew pub license number one. Detroit and Mackinac was the first new brewery in Detroit since Prohibition, and that was a brewery license.
And which we only have, I think, four in the state right now, which is
right.
Bell's, Upper Hand, and oh my gosh, I should know the fourth one.
Yeah.
Yeah, why can't I think of it? Is it New Holland?
No, I don't know who the fourth one is actually. I mean, with 200 and some breweries.
Do you know, Dan?
I would think it would be Founders. You have to have that production numbers, right?
It might be Founders, but I don't know what laws and regulations Founders has since they're.
We have breaking news. It is indeed Founders.
It is indeed Founders.
Yes.
How'd you get that?
Did somebody listening
Rob's
live?
Rob's on the.
There you go. It's Founders.
Rob's on the mend. Thanks, Rob. Thanks for being our crack staff researcher.
Well, that's what he would normally do if he was in. That's what his bad hand too. Rob's the one that cut his hand.
I guess his hand's doing okay if he's already checking our stats.
So as we mentioned, Dan, another employee over at Motor City Brewworks, you are the beer maker, I believe is what you said, the one who makes the beer.
We have some other brewers there, but I assist.
You assist?
Yes.
How long have you been with Motor City?
Almost 12 years now.
12 years. Are you the longest tenured brewer there, or is there somebody else that's been longer?
John would be longer, but he doesn't brew anymore.
You don't brew anymore, John. Why not?
It's good. I'm okay now. Yeah, I got that out of my system. It's all right.
So was it in regards to your main staples, so your Ghetto Blaster, your Nut Brown, like is that your recipes, or is that
Nut Brown, Ghetto Blaster is mine. Nut Brown was a collaboration with a friend. Pale Ale, that's pretty straightforward, Pale Ale. Let's see, Porter was another early collaboration. I'm trying to think of the first wave. The first wave was Pale Ale, Porter, Nut Brown. Ghetto Blaster came out in 97. And then we did a couple variations of wheats, of which we haven't produced anything of the first original batches of wheat lately.
That's ridiculous that Ghetto Blaster is almost like old enough to drink.
Oh, hey. 20 years old, yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely one of my very first like forays into like I always refer to Killian's as my main like branch into craft beer, because I always refer to craft beer as basically your non-American light lager. So, you know, a lot of people Sam Adams. I know Killian's is obviously owned by Coors, but nonetheless, that was to get my taste buds. And then I still remember Ghetto Blaster, and I remember I had cases of it at my house, and my grandfather's like, I can't drink this stuff. I'm like, try it. You'll like it. You'll like it. Guy is a true Bush or PBR guy.
Yeah.
And I gave him, he took a sip, and he's like, nope. And I'm like, all right, I'll go run to 7-Eleven and get you your damn PBR.
30s.
So
is it because it didn't come in a 30-pack? I think if you could have wrapped these cans in a 30-pack, you would have just not known the difference.
No, I think it's more like, you know, if you put a glass of, like, PBR and a glass of water and you might not be able to tell the difference between the two, like, that's the kind of drunk you like to get.
So just, like, steady throughout the day drunk.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I can, you know, cut my grass and not cut myself.
He was your typical Italian-American, like...
Get off my lawn?
No, not that bad. He laid tile, so he was always like a hard worker. I think he was second generation, but all he did was work and drink and play poker. So, and of course, 2 and 3 happened at the same time, but you didn't need 3 to do 2.
So would it be like 1 and then 2A and 2B?
Well, it'd be like 1 and 2 and then 2 and then 2 and 3 and then 2.
Okay.
So the 2 was like the consistent.
Would it be like 2 and then 1? And then 2 and 1 at the same time?
I think he showed up to work sober. I mean, at least he had to have his wits about him when he was trying to get people to pay him.
I mean, it's laying tile, right?
Yeah.
How difficult is laying tile? You spread the mortar and you put the tile down?
Have you ever laid tile? I was going to say, I laid tile for one of my family's companies, and I was 14 years old, and that was the most like labor-intensive job I've ever had.
I think I did linoleum with my dad in a kitchen once. And I kept getting my giant feet rolled over by that giant steel rolling pin. I think I was like Amelia Bedelia by the end of that episode.
Oh my God, that's a cut. So 12 years you've been over at Motor City Brew Works. What kind of beers would we know? Like, do you have any recipes that are out in the mainstream or something that's always in the brew pub?
We do a lot of different new beers in the last year since we moved Ghetto Blaster out of that facility. But a lot of them are collaborations with a lot of different people.
Okay.
Getting a lot of different input before putting anything into the bottle or the market.
Now, are you talking like other bars, other brewers,
a lot
home
of
brewers?
Brewers there, customers that come in.
Okay.
Accounts that, you know, are exploring new beer styles.
They did a collaboration with Brown Iron just recently for St. Baldrick's, the Kolsch.
Yeah, it went over really well.
It was a fun one. So we had
was that
Ryan and
tap
Tim.
Or bottle?
Tap. Just on tap. But okay. It was cool because it was in, I think, 7 different bars. And that's a big deal for us because we don't distribute. So it was cool to be a part of something that was available in other locations.
That had your name. Oh, it's free publicity at that point.
I mean, technically it was marketed under Motor City. But, you know, people that are active in the St. Baldrick's community.
That was a really fun project. They brought their recipe over. It was a beer that they were making for some time, and we worked together, scaled it up so it worked on our system, and it turned out really well.
So what's going on? Like, I hear there's a new brewery or tap room opening. Is that
for us?
Yeah, for you guys.
There's a lot of them opening right now.
There's a lot of them opening. Yes, there's a lot of breweries. I'm talking about more you guys.
We're working on opening a satellite facility on Livernois.
So
between
that's
7 and 8 over by the University of Detroit Mercy.
Okay.
The Avenue of Fashion, as it's historically known.
So what made you choose that side of the Livernois corridor, the south of 8 Mile side, I should say?
It had a lot of the markers that we're comfortable with, and a lot of the same attributes that our neighborhood used to have. You know, it's anchored by a university. It has a very strong residential community, and there's a lot of individual store owners there along that strip. So in that regard, it kind of filled our profile pretty nicely. The building itself is really unique. It's the oldest building on Livernois. It used to be the sales center for the Sherwood Forest neighborhood back at the turn of the century.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a pretty awesome, very
unique
space.
It's like a model
space.
Then? Like a model unit?
No, it was actually a converted...
It's an old farmhouse.
Yeah, it's a converted farm. I don't know if it was a farmhouse as much as a barn kind of a thing. I don't know if it was.
So is it going to be production only?
It was a farmhouse.
Yeah. No, it will be small production and mostly on-premise consumption. So it'll be a tap room with a pilot brewing system, winemaking system, and a small still. And that's so we can host, you know, other breweries, guest collaborations like we've been doing, homebrew clubs. And then we will also have some of the production from our Canfield facility available at the Livernois facility.
When you go into the space, it's like an old, looks like a Viking beer hall.
Really?
It's like an old barn. And has a, you know, the attic upstairs, a little loft area that you want to put a little cool ship up there and play around with some... ferments.
Have you guys started the build out of that, or are you guys?
We're in the planning stages. The blueprints have gone downtown, so we're in the kind of in the bureaucratic stage.
The greasing of the wheels.
The building's been actively worked on.
There's a sign right in front that's updated on Google Maps that says Slide and Motor City Brewing Works coming uptown 2017.
Right, which is now probably 2018.
Yeah. Now 2018.
Yeah. And so, Slide might not be in there.
Yeah, it's still a fluid work in progress on who's going to be participating. But, it's in motion. You know, these types of things go slow, and all of a sudden, there's a rush, and then they just happen. So right now we're in a lot of the pre-planning stages.
Yeah, we saw that as we've been following. We had two early on guests, well, three technically if you include the Downey family. But they're open. But we had Easter Market Beer Co. on, so we had the investors as well as Hazen Schumacher, on the show, as well as we had Dan Riley come on to talk about Axel, who's on the other side of the Livernois corridor.
Mm-hmm.
We've had there was one other one that I really can't. Urban Rest, Zach Topinski, opening up in Ferndale.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that one.
So we checked in with him about a year and a half ago, and then about a half year ago. So he's still getting it. He was a very well-known homebrewer and well-known BJCP judge, and he's like, I want to open up. I think it was all Belgian style or all German style. That's what he wants to do. So he's like, got the funds and opening up the place.
That should be opening soon, right?
Urban Rest, yeah,
any day now, right?
I was gonna say it's getting close. Like we've been invited to do a guest brew over there as well.
Where's that at?
It's going to be. Let me check. If you go to betterondraft.com/mibeermap, you can actually see all the upcoming breweries. But it's going to be at Woodward Heights in Hilton. So
kind of
right
like
on the
industrial area.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's right. It's on the east side of the train tracks off of Woodward Heights.
What about Bee Nectar then almost?
Bee Nectar is, as I'm looking at it, is south of 9 Mile.
Is that where Temper Mill is?
So this is where north of 9 Mile. Nine and a half.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say Lincoln's then 10 and a half.
So. Yeah, Lincoln's 10 and a half. So that's where Roke is off of Lincoln. But
so,
go on.
So kind of... As people who have been around from the beginning of the real beer revolution, as I'll say, just kind of use that as a broad term since, let's say, the late 90s, early 2000s, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen just in the general beer community and beer as a whole in Metro Detroit and even nationally?
The sheer volume of participants. I mean, there's been a lot of changes from the wholesalers embracing the industry, which was really never the case in the early days, to the retailers, really. I tell the same story all the time. In the beginning, you used to go in and, try to sell a beer, and the accounts would be like, well, we already have a micro beer, and it'd be like Blue Moon, or something. It's like one micro is fine. And now you've got accounts that some of them just carry micros, some of them just carry Michigan micros. So that's a dramatic change.
Do you see any difference in either the quality or style of the liquids that are coming out? I don't want to say how embarrassingly young I was in 1999, 13. But I definitely didn't have, you know.
Were you drinking?
Christian Brothers and Michelob Lager, the original ribbon tops.
Awesome.
And Seagram's, the original four-pack wine coolers when possible. But what style of beer was coming out back then when you were first pushing it out to the variety that you see now?
We were making a lot more accessible flavors. Even breweries like Founders in the very beginning, I don't think they really switched to the really high gravity beers that they've become known for till, you know, a little bit into their game. And it was kind of the same thing with Motor City because it was hard enough to get people acclimated to a full flavored beer, let alone something super hoppy or super high gravity.
And you had no choices of really ingredients, you know, 20 plus years ago, as you do now, all the different types of hops, different yeast strains available.
Well, I mean, you look at the growth within the state, like the state of Michigan didn't even have a hop, hop product that they created 10 years ago, and now it's, what, fourth in the country in regards to production? So
a lot of peripheral industries popping up around it. Hops, barley as well. You know, we've got a malting house now.
Yep, we got the malting house. What's it called? The Michigan Malting House?
Motor City Malt.
Yeah. Yep.
Pilot Malt House.
It's easy
also
for me to remember that name.
Why is that? Rob, welcome.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. How's your hand?
Throbbing.
Throbbing?
It hurts.
Like, I gave you the night off.
I didn't.
I did.
I had a delivery that needed to.
I have a delivery for you too.
He was my premium rush.
I knew, damn well I was going to be here. So
okay,
it just was a matter of what time and how fast, you know, I was going to get in and out of the hospital.
Now, is this a work related injury?
No, this is an absolute ignorant related injury.
Were you trying to, like, cut watermelons with a hacksaw or something?
I wish it was, you know, something like that.
Is it something you're embarrassed to say on air what you did?
No, it was me just trying to open up a package. I couldn't find the scissors, so I decided to try and use a steak knife and just kind of stab myself.
So, is it one of those childproof things that you can't ever open up that you just...
Don't you hate those damn things?
Actually, you know what the key to that is? Jar openers.
Yeah, I'm a little late on that
right now. Okay. What was it that you were opening?
Batteries?
No.
B batteries?
Was it a bag of goldfish?
No, it was...
scissors. He was trying to open scissors.
Exactly. I was trying to open scissors.
Open the package of scissors. There you go.
I was trying to open scissors. And much less to, you know, time this so that I do this right before I had to do a private event in Monroe. Oh. So I basically just kind of wrapped it up and drove out there, did the event, and then just... Said, all right.
You still got the wristband on.
Oh, yes. I still have the wristband on. And just said, all right, where's the nearest hospital? So did that. And
you might just dip it in that Monroe water. You would have got a leech in there so fast, just coagulate everything at the same time.
Right, right. And so the result of that was 5 stitches. So.
Oh, that's what beer's for.
Yeah, that's what beer's for.
Just keep your hand up like you're. What's that movie where he's got his hands out all the time? I can't think of it.
I don't know either.
I have no idea.
I think he breaks his collarbone and he's got his butt, you know.
Yeah, we're just going to keep going. Yeah,
we brought you Motor City Pizza instead of Funyuns this time.
Hey,
so.
You know what?
I'm the Funyuns guy.
He's the Funyuns guy.
Oh, you're the Funyuns guy? Okay.
He's the Funyuns guy. And
well, we brought you.
I've already had one of each, so they're fantastic.
This works because I haven't eaten since breakfast.
They're all different. Just keep in mind they're awesome.
So. Hey, hunger is the best spice.
I haven't gotten really one bad yet.
So how did you guys open the kitchen when you opened up the brewery, or did the kitchen come later?
Kitchen, everything kind of came piecemeal. When we first started, we strictly sold wholesale. We had people would come in and have a beer, but it was for free. And then in 99, the tap room was added on and opened up officially in 2000. And then Dan came on board in 2006. So in 2007 is when we added the kitchen.
Okay.
And our most recent addition would be a distiller's license, which is new as of last week.
Oh, wow.
Wow, last week.
Yeah.
So what's the first batches that you guys are planning on making?
We haven't done any yet. We've been taking all the leftover beer that has it. We're not flushing it down the drain. We've been trying to make beer schnapps.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, just getting our feet wet.
So one of the things that we learned is that cooperages are – there aren't any in Michigan. So have you if you guys get into the whiskey or the gin and you try to age your whiskeys, do you have plans for getting barrels for that? Or?
Barrels are – they're not that hard to come by. They've definitely increased in cost, but there's a distillery in Windsor that has barrels available. We've done some work with Two James and harvested some of their barrels.
I was going to say, what's the ability to bring a barrel across international borders?
Oh, if it's empty.
If it's empty, they don't. Okay. Yeah. I was just curious.
It's stickier when they're full, but yeah.
Well, that's what the cut's for. You bring it to the cut, and that's, you know, at night when the Coast Guard can't see you.
Right. Yeah, you got to be careful what's in there, too.
Yeah, it's really hard to bring across if you have people in there.
That, too.
Yeah. You just get those go-fast boats over by my house, St. Clair Shores. You just take the 5-minute boat ride and you're parked and no one knows anything.
Oh, they know.
I don't know if they do, though.
Oh, they do now.
I was going
to
say.
I don't think they're listening to us.
Why don't you test that theory next Friday at like 2 and we'll see if you show up at 7.
Well, not 2 p.m. I wouldn't. That'd be a terrible idea. But 2, 3 a.m. and you're, I mean, you saw the guy drank 12 Molsons and almost swam across. So if I get a boat and I can park it at one of those little slips right off the marina and float on over and float on back.
All I can think of
is 2 miles the max.
The day that like somebody does that and gets really close is going to be the day that a giant like steamer just like mows right over him. It's like, oh hey, yeah, we're doing some giant transit right now.
All the cans just float to the top because you get crushed.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, no risk, no reward. Or just drop off at Belle Isle and I'll go pick it up. It's even closer, right?
Or you can maybe go down to Boblo, and then at that point you can like do half and half, like half to Boblo and then the other half.
Or if you maybe take your boat from Detroit to Put-in Bay and you have someone just kind of pass you on the way and just kind of keep on trucking. Yay, nay? I don't know.
You just order them. I mean, you just get a shipper to bring it over.
Yeah, we probably should discontinue.
we're overthinking this process. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know, because, you know, obviously there's no liquor left, but since it's liquor paraphernalia, I guess technically. Since
liquor adjacent.
Liquor adjacent. There you go.
Way, way too much talk about illegal activity.
Man, if only there was a beer about the Purple Gang that was in the Michigan.
Who's the Purple Gang? That I always thought is the crummiest name for an actual gang, the Purple Gang.
The Purple Gang.
That is the least intimidating gang in the world. Like, we represent the Pink Gang. Like,
I don't know. I'm pretty sure if I looked into the history of the Purple Gang, it'd be very intimidating.
I think it's like a lot of the Sam Bernstein, like, family. It was the Purple Gang.
Really?
I think it was.
We're going to have to sidebar this conversation definitely for another day.
With an attorney present, yeah.
Wait, who's the attorney?
I don't know, but it sounds like you guys are going to need one.
Allegedly. Well, guess what? I have attorneys present.
Are we going to have, like, before we post live, somebody has to listen to the show, make sure we haven't said anything stupid or illegal or
too late.
I don't think we've accused.
We we come through. There's a fish instead of Matt Bush here.
Just preface sign. Everything in my opinion.
In my opinion.
No, I don't want to hold that opinion because that's then slanderous if I speak it. So I'm just going to say I believe.
So Jolly Pumpkin just opened up by you guys, what, mm-hmm. 2 years ago? How's that been for you guys? Have they taken some of your sales as more people started to show up because you got three breweries right in that little trifecta area?
You know, we're kind of a different operation than what they're doing over there. And you know, our general philosophy is, you know, rising tide, right, you know, brings up all ships. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it's more of a question of we have so many new choices opening up, not just Jolly Pumpkin, but I mean, you just have a ton of beer bars or beer-centric bars.
Including you guys, there's five more breweries opening up in Detroit in the next year and a half.
Well, you got Griffin Claw coming in, was just announced.
Founders
coming in down
Bent Rim, Black Bottom, Brewery Face On.
Yeah, so
Bent Rim.
Yeah,
Griffin Claw is opening some rooftop bar.
Yeah, down at downtown.
It's I don't think they're going to be brewing there, though. I think it's at the DTE over at like 2nd and Bagley.
Right, exactly.
Right, yeah. Over by MGM.
So, you know, right now to me it's a blip because there's just so much coming in so quickly. It's really, Detroit's playing a lot of catch up, you know. So it's We're, you know, compared to any other urban center, we're, you know, half a century behind.
Well, we gained 10 years. We got the queue line today.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're only 40 years behind now that 3.5 mile queue line.
We're in dog years now.
Dog years.
So our always question is, with all this new beer, do you think there's a bubble either imminent or coming, or how much more beer can be put in a general area before it's just too much?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about what's going on in our neighborhood, I mean, these are fairly mature brands coming in. They're opening up satellite operations, and I think all that can help each other. As far as what's going on across the country and what's going on in the state, especially on the distribution side of things, I think we're hitting a saturation point. I mean, it's you have more and more breweries opening, still slowing down a little bit, but there's still more and more openings, and you've got distributors consolidating. So, and then you've got what's happening just as of last year with the Bud and Miller merger, or AB, SAB, and InBev, and then you have them scooping up mid-size craft breweries. So we are at the beginning of what I think will be something of a shakeout. Yeah.
Now, do you think these bigger brands, the Sab Millers and the ABs, are going to buy up these smaller brands to stop them? Or do you think that they're going to use them to gain a foothold where they've lost share to their macro brands because people are just upset with macro?
I think it'll be a little bit of both, right? I mean, if a craft brand that they buy is performing, they're going to keep it going. If it's not performing, they'll shut it down. I think time will tell. You know, what has legs.
Think they'll buy? I guess this is probably both for you and both of you guys. Rather, do you think they'll buy a brand A that is performing to shut down because it's competitive, or B, buy a brand that isn't performing just to shut it down so it's out of its way?
I don't think they would buy anything to shut it down. I mean, they're business people. I'm sure they're looking at it as something that they can either grow or...
But a case is a case, right?
Yeah, so if you sell... It happens all the time. It happens in the record business. They'll sign a band and not put the record out.
Yeah, I was just going to draw that comparison, too, with music and with the independent music and like the early, mid-90s, how that separated. You had bands that succeeded, that kind of paid the way for the bands that didn't succeed. And with major labels, they would front you a money. It's basically a loan. So when you hear like this, you know, they got $1 million, that's to record, that's to do everything that you need to do. It's also, you know, spend, you get money you just get to spend out there to buy equipment, everything. So you have to pay that back with sales. So there's bands that just didn't pay it back and you don't hear from them again. So I think it's similar with like these buying, some of these breweries are going to fail. And the breweries that succeed in their portfolio are going to pay for those failures, and the ones that have the hits are going to pay for the ones that kind of missed.
So, I mean, I'm looking at like right now, there is currently 63 brewery licenses that are in the process of opening within the state of Michigan. That's on top of the 293 breweries that we have that have seating, not including the 20 that are production only. So that's the current state of Michigan breweries. We have, you know, 315 with the breweries production only and seating, and 63 more on the way.
I think the like John brought up earlier about distribution is going to bear a lot of this weight. I mean, the three-tier system is post-prohibition. So before that, we had 15 – before prohibition, there's 1,500 breweries in the country. And those sold directly to – retailers. So it was like it was in Europe with tide houses. So the three-tier system, when it was implemented, there was like 500 breweries. By the 1970s, there was like 90 breweries in the country. This system was never designed to handle 7,000 breweries. So how is that – how can it be sustainable? And it's up to distributors to figure it out, and there's no playbook.
Well, do you have any ideas? I mean, do you have any thoughts on the matter?
I think you're going to see a lot of small distributors pop up, and it goes. I can draw a lot of lines to the music business. You're going to see some really big changes in the distribution.
So who's the Nirvana of the brewery industry?
I haven't thought. I don't know. That would be a hard one for me to nail down. But you know, there's a lot of good. Right now, it's a good time to be a craft beer drinker, I mean, there's never been a better time for that. I think that's who really wins right now.
Right.
And they'll continue to win. But the behind-the-scenes stuff is – it's yet to be determined. I mean, it's all happening in front of us. So having a crystal ball and making these forecasts, I think we all have our guesses. But the way it shakes out, it's going to be totally different. There's nothing like this ever happened in the history of this industry.
So hold that thought. We are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Better on Draft podcast. And we are back. Episode 83 of the Better on Draft podcast. We still have Motor City Brew Works in the building. Is it Brew Works or Brewing Works?
Brewing.
Brewing.
Brewing Works. My apologies. Please don't hate me.
Don't hate him because he's beautiful.
Forgotten.
As Dan's shaking his head, realizing that we're in audio medium, so nobody knows that he's shaking his head. So you guys want to do to mention for the 20th anniversary of Ghetto Blaster coming up that you guys are going to be doing, was it a music release or a album release?
Yeah, actually it is going to be vinyl this time around.
That's so Detroit of you, by the way.
Thanks. it's kind of hard to escape it. Ghetto Blaster came out in 97, and the music and the beer came out at the same time because I was a partner in a recording studio I started it in 92, and then in 96 we changed the name to Ghetto Recorders, and it was downtown behind the State Theater, which is now the Fillmore, and that CD you're holding now was the inaugural CD, so the beer and the CD came out at the same time. And really, it was just a way to reconcile the two worlds, right? You know, because it was like, we've got the studio going. Let's do something fun with the beer.
Did you put it out on cassette as well?
Should have, but no. that first one came out on CD, and it did pretty well. And then the second one we recorded live at the brewery. So we kind of took the gear from the studio over to the brewery and recorded it all on half-inch 8-track. And the second volume did really well. It got picked up by Cargo, United Kingdom, and Revolver here in the U.S. And the synergy was there because the garage scene was really kicking, and we were doing a lot of those bands at the studio. So the Dirt Bombs, the Electric Six.
I was going to say, I recognize two bands on here, so I don't know if that's my bad or...
The sites, and so it was really a great time in Detroit for music. You know, the bands, it was a really tight circle. There was a lot of synergy going on.
Still in its wrapping.
So
it's like, how come it's not opening?
That's for you guys. You guys can fight over that.
Oh, thanks.
And I kept recording, but as we put in the kitchen at the brewery and got sidetracked with construction and things, I didn't really do any releases. So this is the 20th anniversary, and we have quite a collection of archival recordings. And some of the bands are no longer playing together, but it's all really worthwhile stuff. So we're going to release a series of vinyl over the next couple of years. And the first record will come out this summer. And then we'll follow it up with a variety of releases after that, some 45s and some LPs. And really, it's just kind of a snapshot of the Detroit music community on any one particular year.
Sorry, I'll go on that.
Is there a theme of these? Like, is there like a best of 97 for any of them, or is it just kind of whatever fits together?
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. It's like I always likened it to photography. You go out and you shoot a bunch of stuff, and then you see what gels well together, where there's some cohesiveness between the different bands. And that's kind of the challenge, too, because the genres are all over the place. We've got everything from Odoo, which is an Afropop band that's been playing in Detroit for a long time, to, you know, the Mugs, which is like an old school, you know, classic rock, and they've been playing around a long time, too. So, and then everything in between. We have alt country and all of that. So part of the fun for me is just, you know, getting all this stuff rough mixed and in post-production, seeing what fits together.
What do you have, like a lineup that you're expecting, or some, like, are you trying to do old or new, like trying to get some newer local talent, or?
Right now I would like to get what we've recorded up till now out, and then start up with new stuff again.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm always.
So
I'm always,
it's going to be the 20 year and then.
Right. I'm always looking around, but the project really has kind of turned into an archival project. So most of the time the music comes out so much later that it really is, it's like I said, it's an archival project as opposed to promoting current bands.
Okay.
It might catch up, you know, but right now we've got quite a bit of material to get out. which we'll get it out over the next year. Because once
it releases, doesn't sound like a bad problem to have as a bunch of material to have.
No, it's fun, especially when you go over it, because some of the stuff is so long ago. It's like, oh my god, I don't even remember that session. This is awesome.
Yeah, did you? Is it one too many ghetto blasters or
one too many scotches?
Okay.
Yeah,
I will do it.
Yeah, there's some shenanigans that go along with these sessions.
Is there any band that either you followed that you'll still actively go out and seek locally, or that you're excited to go buy a ticket for? Like, I'm sure you've made friends with all these acts, and they say, hey, we're going to do a show at the Masonic or wherever, and they say, you know, there's a ticket out for you. Is there a band that you'll actually go out and pay for that – whether it's their music or the act or the show?
Yeah, I just did last week, and I know most everyone in the band, but I happily paid and went and saw the Immigrant Sons reunion show down at Trinasov, and it was awesome.
What kind of music is that?
It's like it's kind of Eastern European, but with a little pop sensibility.
So we're talking like still washboards and...
No, you're talking bouzouki, violin, cello, you know, electric guitar. It's a little mix. The Immigrant Sons been around for a long time, and they used to be pretty big in the festival circuits, especially the things like the Detroit style, the Concert of Color. You know, where you have very ethnic diverse music sets. But I just bring that up as an example of that's awesome, but the music scene isn't what it used to be, so it's not as cohesive and tight. Like we had the gold dollar, where you could just always go no matter who was playing, because they always had a certain ethos, you know, at the dollar. And the same thing with the Magic Stick, and the Lager House, and even before you guys, I don't know what the age group is, but Finney's was another pub on Woodward back in the '80s. It was. So
do you think
we don't have that right now? So it's just coming back, you know, but we don't have like those catalyst clubs, you know, where you would go, even if you didn't know who the band was, you would just go to see what was playing.
But do you think that is based because the local scene has changed instead of the music? Or do you think because I don't think you could get away with some of the things that you could do in those bars in the 80s today because of oversight and insurance and all these other things that, like, you know, and I could talk about stuff like this forever, but like the tinderbox that those clubs represented, the atmosphere for those places almost can't exist unless you run like an illegal poker game in the back where somebody goes to play.
I don't think it's that as much as is the overhead is now. You know, we like in the 80s, you could start a bar on a shoestring budget. You know, rents have really gotten high in our neighborhood. And so I just think that the scene has gotten splintered, you know. And frankly, you know, you've got some really great clubs out here in Ferndale, you know, some really great sounding rooms. So,
New Way.
Well, yeah, New Way's been around a long time. More recently, I just saw a show over at Otis Supply, and the sound was awesome. It was a perfect little 200-seater, and the sound was great.
I was going to say, I've only been to New Way to see. I went to see Awesome Jarvis and the Wails like almost a year ago over there. I'm like, yeah.
So I think just some of this stuff is cyclical. You know, you get it depends on the age group of everyone performing at a certain time, and are they friends? Are they sleeping with each other? What have you? So
at the show or after the show? Because again,
depends the kind of club, right?
Back to the reason why you can't have these things anymore, because you're gonna find in the '80s you could be 18, sneak into a bar, get your dollar PBRs, and then if you got busted on the way home, you would pour your beer out, and they would let you go. But where if that happened now, you've got like a state, a county, an MLCC issue.
It's a different scene.
You've got five different lawsuits on you for the same thing.
Yeah.
It's almost have to be like a hush-hush.
I think it's just a combination of things. I think things are spread out a little bit, and I think sometimes these scenes are just, like I said, they're just cyclical, and it all depends on everything. It's a combination lock, right? So sometimes that combination lock lines up, and you've got a really strong music community. It happened in Seattle. It happened in Detroit in the early 2000s. And it moves around.
I'd be curious, and I want to take your opinion. Do you think that, and I'm going to explain my scenario, that the downfall and kind of like the struggle in regards to getting back into the scene or a big music scene is based on what I like to call the Facebook maybe theory. And that's, sure, I want to say I want to go, but maybe because there might be something better that night. You know, back in 20 years ago, you knew there was a concert that night and you were going. There was really, you know, no way that you knew that there's going to be another show another night. But now that everyone's inviting you, you know, to their concert, their makeup party, their all these other things on Facebook.
Makeup party?
Are you kidding? Do you not go onto Facebook?
Why are you so stuck on that?
Jesus Christ.
have you not gone onto Facebook in the last, like, year with the Roden Fields and all those other, like, God. it was great when it was just Mary Kay and it was just, like, your mom's friend and,
oh,
like,
hold on. You said make up parties.
Make up.
I thought you said make out parties.
Oh my gosh.
What? All right. Did you not hear make out parties too?
I heard make up, but I heard you freak out about make out.
So, you know,
that's a scene of promotion here.
God. Jesse Spanel called. What?
She's so excited.
What? And she's so
But again, that whole Facebook maybe crowd of, you
that's,
know, not
that's
wanting
another
to commit.
Part of it. Yeah, and I'm no pro at social media, but people that do help us with that end of things have expressed that sometimes it's a double-edged sword. And when you bring it up like that, I do. I see parallels when you're asking about are all these micros or the craft breweries that are opening up blocks around us, are they hurting us? You know, I think that's another part of it. There's just more choice. You know, I don't look at it as competition, mm-hmm. but there's just more choice, and that does splinter groups. And
but even so, the choice, like, and we've talked about it on the show. Beer drinking fans are the most unloyal fans in the entire world, in regards to especially craft beer, because and it's not for the fact that they like or don't like your product. If they go in, like, for instance, and I'm even
– They're loyal to the category, not the brand, so to
they're
speak.
They're loyal to Untapped, yes. Yeah. Well, making that, sure they get to 5,000 unique beers.
That too. Like, if I go to a beer store and I'm – like, mind you, if it's a beer like my style, like a brown ale, and I've never had it, I'll try it. But most people will try a beer just because they've never had it, no matter what it is. So you go to Embrew and, you know, you could have – you know, they've had every single Motor City in the book. They've had the Triple, the IPA, the Ghetto Blaster, the Nut Brown, and then they see Odd Side, Perry, Peach, Schnapps, Beer, Arita. And they're like, well, I've never had that before, so I'm going to have that. And it's the disloyalty because it's like they want the next thing, the next thing, the next thing, and not that standard – you know, consistency beer. You
oh,
know,
yeah, you nailed it. That yeah, that's it. It's what's new, what's new, what's new. I mean, since Dan came on board, we've you know, my whole thing, let's try to make four beers that are really consistent and that are drinkable. That model really doesn't hold up. You know, it's, you know.
What do you always refer them to is the beers that they like Mango Unchained at Baffin. That's their...
Flagship
beers. So you got your flagship beers. Thank you.
But I don't have a microphone.
You have a microphone. I didn't turn you off.
Right.
As you're talking into it, you don't have your headset on, so you don't know. So, you know, you have these flagship beers, and I think that's actually what re-sparked Black Lotus. You know, Black Lotus, I think, had this downward trend, and then they brought in Nick, their new brewer.
Yeah.
And they're like, you need to make 1, 2, 3, and 4, which is like their hip hops, their Tao, Amber, and two others. You make whatever else you want. And I think having those standards, you know, your ghetto, everybody knows Ghetto Blaster, everybody knows Nut Brown. Not necessarily too familiar with the triple and the IPA, simply because, you know, especially with Motor City, Ghetto Blaster is your flag. That's the one everyone knows. That's the one everyone's heard of. Is that your top selling beer?
Yeah.
That's all we made in all our tanks for the longest time. We couldn't make any other beers. That's all we made.
So when you have that thing, you know, everybody goes after that Ghetto Blaster. But again, we're reaching that new now period. And I think Oddside and Shorts has taken advantage of that by making 150 different beers each year because they know they can recapture that audience without having to consistently make the same. I mean, to be honest, what's Oddside's flagship?
Citra Pale.
Bean Flicker?
Brown note.
Bean Flicker. There you go. Brown Bean notes from Against the Grain.
Right. Yeah,
no, I was
grain.
Thinking, but what's a guy who poops his pants? What's
Against the Grain?
Yeah, against
oh,
the
is
grain.
It really?
Yeah.
That's Kentucky. Nice try, though. Wrong state.
I mean, I think Joe Short, I mean, that's his passion is making all those different beers. So I don't know. I never really equated.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
No, I understand. I understand. I guess I mean, you're right. And that's what fuels the what's new mantra.
I think that there's people out there that just want consistent beers, though. I love New Belgium and Sierra Nevada because of that. And I probably drink a Two Hearted every single week because it tastes the same everywhere I go.
Yeah, but even New Belgium's been branching out with so many new beers. And isn't Sierra Nevada the beer camp company?
Yep.
Yeah, but they're not known year round for that, I don't think.
Well, again, if we take away the microcosm of Oddside and Shorts and we more reference to like a Bell's or something, you know, they probably release the same amount of different beers as Bell's does.
I mean, all I'm saying is I think that there's definitely a market for people that know how to brew, like, really good-tasting beers that are always the same. Like, I mean, I'm not a fan of one of those Michigan breweries that you threw out there because their beers don't always taste the same.
I would agree with that.
I think, to that point, you know, you can only have one or two experimental beers before you just say, okay, I've drank this Belgian upside-down quad imperial Kolsch with Honey Nut Cheerios. You can only drink so much. You can have try it once, and then you can go try the cardboard flavored whatever thing until you want to go back to the beer that you know that you're going to like. Like, you don't want to spend $8 on a pint and not like it, and then spend $8 on another pint and then not like it. And you're like, well, finally give me something that I want to drink, and then you go back to your favorite.
I'm cutting the show at 67 minutes. I'm taking that mark, and I'm going to go to North Center Brewing over in Northville, Michigan.
Yes.
Just south of Baseline over on North Center Road, and we're going to go tell Kevin and be like, hey, let's make this beer. And he's going to look at us like, what? I heard Kolsch and Honey Nut Cheerios.
Well, that's, you know, people always miss. They always put pumpkin in their fall seasonal. I really think you ought to make a turducken with cranberry, mashed potato, sweet potato, and macaroni and cheese, and let that all melt or boil down and put that in a beer.
I really feel like I need to turn your mic off now after that.
I think that was when Jones Soda tried doing that with soda. Like,
the turkey dinner, that was Thanksgiving dinner.
They jumped the shark with that one because then I remember Jones Soda went public and their stock went way down after the release.
Oh, yeah. Is it not because they look like Steve Madden shoes?
They were before Steve Madden, so it might be the other way around.
It just looked just like bad press, like a bad newspaper article on every label.
I used to submit photos all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, they were pretty revolutionary when they came out. I mean, it was pretty interesting what they were doing back in the day. But, I mean, when they came out with those flavors, that struck a nerve. And that's when they started selling to chains like Target and things like that. But that they were horrible beers. If you drank them, you were like, oh, my God, but you bought them every year as a present. Well, the turkey dinner was really?
I think we need to find some turkey dinner Jones.
but I'm saying some
aged turkey dinner Jones.
But just reeling it back into my point is like with beer, I think there's a threshold, you know, and that might be it, a turkey dinner beer or whatever you're talking about, like a food where
but
you
I mean,
get too far.
Yeah, I guess I don't even know, in the
soda industry, people are pretty standard in their ways in regards to what they're drinking. Some of them are even to the point where they don't even touch Pepsi products if they like Coke. You know, when you're talking soda, sure, you have, you know, your Jones and your Faygo, especially if you're in Michigan. Those are your multi-flavor giant.
What about your Ohana's? You're dropping the ball on Ohana?
Yeah, I am.
What? I mean, yeah. Oh.
Yeah, Rob said yeah, too. So, but again, these things people like, I can even think of, like, for me, for soda. Like, I go and I drink the same exact soda no matter where I go. Just because that's what I like. Like, for me, and even so, like, I love Dr. Pepper. So if Dr. Pepper's there, I'll drink it. If Dr. Pepper's not there, I'll go to Mellow Yellow. If Mellow Yellow's not there, I get whatever diet soda it is.
You get Mr. Pibb.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Pibb. Mr. Pibb's good, though. That's not even like – that's like when people are like, oh, you got to get Pibb Extra. Pibb Extra.
See, that's interesting. So Pibb Extra. So your soda habits are different than your beer habits. So.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, it even gets to the point where there are times if I go to like 7-Eleven, like I don't know what it is, but cherry flavor. So like I love cherry Dr. Pepper or cherry Mellow Yellow.
Oh, the cherry squirt. The cherry squirt.
I haven't had
it. It's the ruby red. It's the ruby red.
Oh, it's an actual bottle.
Yeah, the ruby red squirt.
Yeah.
Because I always go to those Coke machines where you can make your own like 1,000 different variations of each.
Really?
Yeah.
Like I got a soda stream. That's what you want. You want to get a soda stream.
Kind of like a soda stream. Yeah. Well, no, I always, when I go to Five Guys Burgers and Fries, they always have Mellow Yellow there with the Coke machines.
Oh, yeah.
What if it gets that way with beer? Like, you know, they just. evolution of the growler station where you just do suicide beers.
Well, I mean, if you
suicide, like, wow, that's your own.
That might be where we're heading.
Well, you know what? They've got the Keurig, the K cup for beer now, so maybe it's just, you know, equal parts. Or Miller Lite
with some slush, like, you know,
if it could get through the randoming process fast enough.
Well, all I can think about now is a bartender like taking a pint of beer and going a little here, a little here, a little here, a little here.
How far away are we from that, though?
I mean, well, you know, my very first experience with Bee Nectar, Jefferson, who we had on the show, he was the tap room manager. A lot of people know Jefferson, and the fact that like that's all he was doing the entire time was mixing meads. Like, I wonder what this tastes like. I wonder what this tastes like. But he was more doing it to sell it. Like, hey, this is what tastes really good with this one. But in regards to beer itself, like, that's all I want to do now is I want to be like, I want to do like, do you have a cherry cherry wheat?
No, we should infuse a beer on our next episode.
Infuse
I'll bring in my French press.
You know,
we'll do it.
No, I got an idea. We won't do a name that beer. We'll be name those beers. And I'll do all beers. I'll mix two beers together.
I do not.
And we can see if I can get
I do not want to order a beer and basically be emulating what I'm doing at Starbucks. Just
a unicorn beer.
The Frappuccino, the unicorn Frappuccino.
Right. Just
I don't know, man. I'm a fan of it. I did Samoas in a Bourbon County, and it was money.
Mm. With your French press, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I've done those before. When it gives you an idea like what it would be to infuse certain base beers with flavor. So you take fresh anise and you can put it in stouts, and you just see what you're going to get, and then you could take that to the brewery. You know, it's great for like home brewing and stuff. Like, I think because the flavors come really close.
Or even testing Randall's before you go through all the work of hooking it up to a tap. Because we actually have a Randall at our brew house, but you know, it's like you're not going to throw something on that you don't know tastes well. So,
well, I could see that. I don't have any experience with the Randall, but that makes total sense because that's what you're really
doing. Well, do you guys Randall anything at the tap house, or is everything just your straight pour?
Dan heads all that up. Like I said, I don't even
know what a Randall is. Tell me what this Randall is.
Who is this Randall? I think he owes me money.
Randall is the child of Dogfish Head, and it's a special little contraption that you hook up right up to the tap, and it's got a little chute of ingredients, and it just filters through. So it's instantly.
It's like a hot bick, I'm assuming.
Well, have you ever seen a? No, I'll tell you exactly how he made it because it's from Have you ever seen, you know, like an outground beer pool filter?
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's made out of.
PVC.
It's made from a pool filter.
Is it safe
to
drink? It leaks like a pool filter.
Well, you don't put chlorine in the beer.
I'm thinking the plastic.
Is it diatomaceous earth in there?
No, but he uses that concept, and that's what the first versions were made from. So it's
like when you hollow out an apple and light one side, the other side's going to taste a little bit like apple because it's going through the apple.
I understand the principle. I just didn't know what this person was or apparatus.
I felt the same way when we talked about Cooper for the first time.
Cooper. Not
Angela?
What?
Oh, you were going to say something. Yeah.
Oh.
We were all waiting and excited.
I don't know. I follow Dogfish, so I see a lot of the cool stuff that they do with it. You know, they do it specifically they rap?
Yeah, they're rappers.
Yeah, they have a rap album. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
Oh, no.
East Coast white rap, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
The Beastie Boys are putting up beer now?
Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
I was going to say, don't they have a liquor or a beer out, don't they? Other than, obviously, the aforementioned song Brass Monkey, which is not their concoction, but a concoction that they sang about.
Right. Well, them and Bill Cosby did the Spanish Fly together.
Oh, come on.
That's a timeout.
Come on.
Yeah. That calls for the timeout right there.
That's a timeout.
So, Motor City Brewworks, what do you guys got going on in the upcoming season? Do you have any new beers, any events, concerts, anything like that?
Outside of the release for the next series of Ghetto Blaster volumes, Dan's got some stuff in the wheelhouse.
Right now in the tap room, we have a bourbon barrel-aged beer that we just tapped today. I think it'll be on for the rest of the weekend. For Mother's Day, we made this blueberry wheat beer, which I think blueberry wheat... fermented with a wild yeast strain. Didn't use any refrigeration. It's kind of super wild, but 30% of it is blueberry juice, so it's super sweet. Has that kind of little blueberry, but we're bringing it out for Mother's Day. It has a nice purple tint to it. It's not really like beer. Talking about soda pop, it's It's kind of nice and sweet.
It's got a the saison notes. It's got that. It's a beautiful Belgian yeast, and then it's Michigan blueberries. So, when you use fresh ingredients, I mean, it tastes like a really well made blueberry soda. That's what. But I mean, the yeast caught me.
It's
love
a whole
yeast.
Different thing about it's beer, but it's marketed towards or we made it for. You know, the sweet beer drinkers.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a good summer beer, too. Something that you're not going to get completely sloshed on and something that's easy.
It's 7%. No, it's 7%.
Yeah. Oh, never mind.
Oh, no.
You have to be careful with it.
You're taking your time with that.
Do you guys, I know the big thing these days is sours. Is that something that you might sit on a little bit and
sour?
We've
played with some for a while. Right now on draft, we have this beer called Old Gear Oil, which is we spontaneously fermented it. We had our house strain that we pitched in weak and had it spontaneously ferment with the windows open and then aged it in barrels for like 8 months.
Okay.
So we play around with that kind of stuff. We have another one coming up, which is just sitting there. I have beer sitting across the street in our warehouse for almost 3 years.
Oh.
But we inoculate everything. But we plan on doing a quick sour, a kettle sour this spring. Or not this spring, but this summer. We have our summer brew coming out. But we did dabble with sours for a little bit.
Yeah, and we've kind of got two different programs. So a lot of this stuff is just available at the West Canfield, at the tap room. So we're not necessarily packaging all of this and selling it through wholesale, especially the super experimental stuff.
Now, when we haven't gotten a lot of time with you today, but what are kind of the ideas and beers that inspire you to say, oh, I want to try this? Or is there something that you think of?
This whole last year is... you know, we opened this restaurant. We put a restaurant in, and we replaced all our brewing equipment, slowly remodeled the building, did the exterior of the building, put a big beer garden in. And as all this was going on in the last 10 years, there's an explosion of hops, you know, the home brewing industry of what was available and what people were playing with. So this whole last year was playing with all these new ingredients. I think we've used 30 different hops. Just learning what all these new experimental hops are and all the new yeast and the new yeast manufacturers. You know, we went through multiple yeast strains, just trying to come up with what's there and trying to devise new recipes.
Is there any recipe that was a surprise hit or something you thought would work that just
everything
kind of...
Everything that I don't think tastes good is a hit.
So you're like the opposite of the taste buds.
Yeah.
The IPL, I think, was kind of a surprise.
Well, that one's really...
The Gigawatt, that which we are selling wholesale
Citra
now.
Citra hops, you know, all these new proprietary hops are in. That the IPL is a higher alcohol lager. 7% and it's majority Citra hops.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest miss is that the immarketableness of the IPL. Like I know like Magic Hat had one and it fell right away. But with the flavor of an IPA and the crispness of an IPL, I'm just baffled that it really has just never caught on.
People either like it or hate it, man. I've sat next to people at bars drinking our Gigawatt. And I've had some people, I've just overheard, I'm not even getting involved, just passively. They'd be like, I love this. And other people are like, let me have something different. I mean, it's really, it just to me strikes me as people either love it or hate it.
Well, again, I think thinking about the whole Metro Detroit microcosm, you know, even the Detroit microcosm, we're more apt to try new beers, whereas Magic Head, who tried to take it on a national level, might not have gotten that backing. But we also have a lager only brand, which is Wolverine makes lagers and lagers only, so everything that they make is a form of lager, whether it's their IPL, their bourbon barrel aged, Massacre, which is that's a stout, right?
Which one?
The Massacre?
Massacre, no, that's still a lager. It's just a bourbon barrel aged lager.
Okay, so all these lager based thing again, it's hard to think. You know, and we talked about it, and obviously I know you guys are on a timeline, but it's hard to really think about beer as a whole when it's a completely different industry in Metro Detroit than in Michigan, than in the United States.
Yeah, and Michigan's a little bit off from the rest, especially the West Coast, right? I mean,
we're
catching up fast.
You would think that, but Grand Rapids doesn't even have the per capita most amount of breweries. That's Ann Arbor now. Ann Arbor has the most breweries per capita, so it's the most.
Where's Grand Rapids?
The West Coast. So again, that you know, Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, Ann Arbor, you know, those cities are starting to become more and more in depth with so many breweries that sooner or later, you know, that's where I fear is there's going to be that pop, is where, you know, who's going to open up a brewery and close within a year.
Oh, I think that's it. I think we're moving into that world.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with the Better on Draft podcast. And we are back, episode 83 of the Better on Draft podcast.
Wayne Krabet episode.
There
Wayne
it is.
Krabet.
I'm wrecked to jet like Wayne Krabet.
You know what I feel like we missed?
The number of the white receiver. The number of white. Every white receiver ever has been named numbered 83.
I'm trying to think who.
Remember Wes Welker?
Wes
number 83. True story, number 83.
Is Wes Welker really number 83?
Yeah. He was.
I'm trying to figure out what the number is for this one guy, because I feel like we missed it, and it was an oh, yeah, it was number 16. Former Detroit Lion.
Chris Dunham?
No, but this is the four-year anniversary of the time he got arrested three times in a week.
Titus Young,
that's right, yes. Oh,
Titus
my God.
Prisoner? He got a DUI, then he got arrested for jumping the fence to try to get his car back at the car impound.
And then he got arrested for also, like, getting the car out. He got arrested for either A, breaking into the car, or B, getting the car out of impound. Like, he went the whole full crazy.
I feel like there was a Where Are They Now that showed up on ESPN probably about 2-3 weeks ago or something like that.
Yeah, I don't
prison. The answer is prison.
Oh no, it wasn't Titus Young. They were talking about Charles Rogers.
Oh no, the answer is prison. Yes, he is 4 years sentence in prison for felony battery.
Well, is he?
That'll
you
do
know
it.
What? Never mind. We're gonna leave the.
He's
New England Patriots out of this.
Let's do that. You were already, you know.
I was gonna say, don't leave me hanging.
Oh God!
There you go.
You know what? We've got a blood oath. I'll write you later.
Damn.
So with that in mind, usually segment two is the news, but we're going to bring Brown.
as I completely forgot the electron Brown as I was rushing to get to the house.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got it, and then I gave it to one of our reviewers. So.
Well, you calling him Brown, is that an issue? Do I have to call HR on that?
I am HR.
Yeah.
I'm the chief everything officer. HR, finance, tech. Like the only thing that I don't manage is segment three or two.
Jumping on bars at random breweries, right?
Oh, yeah, you manage jumping. We did have our competition, and we went through two kegs in an hour and a half.
Hour and five, yeah. Not yeah. 5 minutes.
We rocked Baffin with the Mango Unchained. And
the Force of a Thousand Suns.
The Force of a Thousand. I see what you did there. She won't get it for another 8 seasons, though. Yeah, so we had that competition. Baffin won the Stout 16. We definitely had a lot of fun. What was great, though, is that it was packed, but it wasn't overly packed. Like, it wasn't out the door waiting. So everyone got their beers. Definitely beers.
I think it's because it was 1 o'clock on a Sunday.
1 o'clock on a Sunday. It was a perfect timing, though. I don't care. So.
Mango?
Hey.
Mango?
You know, we do have a few things coming up before Rob gets into the news. Did you know that next week our guest is Jack Zatuna of Zatuna Liquor?
Aww.
Look at that.
Took me 2 goddamn years to get an interview with
Tell
this guy.
Can I
miss Jack next week?
Oh, yes. Jack will be here next week over at Zatuna Liquor, Rochester Road, just south of M59. Check him out. And then this Sunday, we're going to be on the news.
Sort of. Kind
sort of.
For good, not for bad.
For good, yeah.
Yes.
We're going to be on a 3-letter network.
A 4-letter network. Well, XYT.
It's main
ABC.
It's an affiliate of the main 3-letter network. Yeah.
All right, someone has to do something bad, or so we can go viral.
No, I don't want to do anything like that.
Like the guy who puked into his hand on live TV on the news desk.
No. I just want to keep this stuff simple. You know, get through it.
Get through
and
make my mama proud.
Make my mama proud.
So 11 a.m. Sunday, Mother's Day, on Channel 7, 7 Sports Cave. We'll be on with Justin Rose this week.
I love you, Mama.
We're also going to be at the Cascale Festival this weekend, as well as World Expo Beer next weekend. So we're going to be all over the place. But, Rob.
Hey.
How about the news that doesn't involve Better on Draft?
Yeah, there's a bit. As we were kind of talking about a little earlier, on the break, Bigelow came up in the news. Since we've been having so many buyouts that have been coming out the last 2 weeks, obviously last week with Wicked Weed and the final complete purchase of Lagunitas by Heineken, Bigelow has stepped in and they have bought out Arbor Brewing Company. So the pizza chain pretty much closed on a deal to acquire them. Financial terms on a 10-year deal or agreement were not disclosed. But basically, the ABC's now former owners, Matt and Renee Graff, they've been pretty much bought out.
We've had on our show.
We've had them on the show. Awesome, awesome people. But they've been bought out completely as owners for North American operations, but they're still going to retain their venture in India.
Wow.
Which I think it was going to be just called Greff Brewing LLC or something to that effect. I forgot. I had to look at the article again.
That's so weird because their logo obviously is like the Arbor.
Yeah.
Like the name, the logo, and everything. You're pretty much, what's the point of, mm-hmm. what's the point of keeping the,
yeah.
the Indian?
I don't know, but they're still going to keep it. Farm and Ferment, Bigelow's holding company, they plan on expanding the brewing capacity in the Ypsilanti facility from 6,000 to 20,000 barrels later this year, and also plan on adding two new brew pub locations somewhere here in Michigan. I guess they really haven't made decisions as to where. But it's going to be.
I mean, as long as they keep the recipes, I'll be fine. As long as they bring back Old 22, I'll be really fine.
Oh, I'm sure you would.
Do you guys make an alt? No.
We've never made one. We've talked about it.
You should make one.
I homebrewed like 20 years ago. I made them before, but.
We should collaborate and do an alt over there with you guys.
Come on over. Let's do it.
Let's do it right now.
Let's do it. Get out of here.
So, right, guys, from a production standpoint, these guys are going to go from 6,000 barrels to 20,000 barrels in what period of time did you say?
They basically just said they're going to have that set up this year.
Do you think you could triple your output in a year and keep the quality and
looks
everything?
Looks good on paper.
Yeah, on paper, on paper you can do it.
But do you think that as a head brewer, you could triple your output like that within 12 months? And
if they already have the infrastructure in place of a brew house that's expandable or you just have to add in tanks, you could increase production pretty easily. So it is possible if you have the brew house in place.
If you carry that down the line a little bit, if you go that kind of increase, that means your product is going further out, unless you're going deeper in your backyard, which right now
all I hear is, though, that they're increasing capacity. I don't hear anything about them selling that much beer.
So to answer your question, if you don't have things like pasteurization and certain elements that will give you shelf stability, the further out you go, you do stand the risk of product instability. So sometimes it's not just a question of, you know, can you ramp it up? Yes, you can. But if the product's going to sit on a shelf longer, then you need to take that into account, and you might need to change your operations a little bit. But
it just seems like if you were going to jump from maybe 6,000 to 10,000 barrels, feasible. But jumping all the way to 20 seems like a stretch and a half.
Yeah,
like you're
hard. Yeah.
And I'm not even thinking as far down the line as, well, is it going to be good on the shelf? I'm thinking if I'm used to doing 6,000 in a year, and I have to do three times that, where am I cutting corners to do triple the work? Or is it just going to be we're going to bring in three times the people who are all going to do the same amount of work?
Well, Dan's right. I mean, it's really just, it takes the same amount of hours to do 1,000 barrels as it does 20 barrels, right? If you've got, depending on the scale of your brew house and your fermentation tanks.
And the larger you get, it's more automated, so it's just pushing the button.
But what happens is you do get into the complications of you do have to consider it sitting on a store shelf. You do have to consider it sitting on one of 80 taps at one of these multi-tap
bars. Beer consumption is going down. Where is it all going?
Where is it going?
You got the infrastructure to support 20,000 production aside. You're talking about adding a completely new sales force or additions to a sales force that. I mean, you're talking about not just having a rep. You're talking about having a team. So if you're talking about doing that in a year. There's a lot of investment that needs to go into people that needs to be taken into account, not on the production side, because as you guys are saying, production on the production side, you can you can turn that up pretty easy. It's you can make 20,000 barrels, you know, with the expansion with the same amount of brew crew in automated systems. But to sell that and implement it, I mean, the playing field's very crowded.
Right.
To sell beer in this climate, you got to have people.
You got to have them.
If you have a restaurant chain, yeah, though, it would be really easy.
Sure. If not for, you know, Grand Rapids and, you know, the budding brewery market that's in Ohio, it is kind of like where are they going to go? I mean, they're going to go up north. what is there? And it's tough to see.
They're going to ship via Edmund Fitzgerald.
Ah. There we go.
The model would work, though, if they're opening up satellite tap rooms.
If it's it sounds like it's a restaurant corporation, and if they have a lot of units, I don't know much about the company, though, but it sounds like they could sell it to themselves.
Right. There you go.
Big Alora, call Motor City.
There we go. I'm going to skip that next one. I'm going to leave that one for last. This one I kind of saw because it was some crazy stuff going on between Berkeley, California and Fieldwork Brewery. They are in a little bit of trouble because they released a one-off beer, which they called The Meadows. Beer itself isn't a problem, and neither is the name. It's basically what it was referred to as, and they were calling it a Vermont farmhouse ale. Now, apparently, Vermont has this little thing called the Representation of Vermont Origin Rule, where this mandate, which has been in place since 2005, requires any food product labeled Vermont must originate from that state. One of the breweries out there, the owner of Hill Farmstead Brewery, Sean Hill, no relation to, you know, the former Lions backup, he came out and went to his state rep. His state rep then sent a tweet out to Fieldwork basically saying it might be time to change the name, to which Fieldwork came back and said, you know, thanks for your quote-unquote concern. It's a one-time beer. We're sure you can find better uses of your time, to which then Hill Farmstead got in basically saying that, you know, calling our rep is basically what they're supposed – this is what they're supposed to do. And essentially that not only did you guys should just change that, but, you know, you guys have been non-compliant, to which Fieldwork just basically just dropped an LLL and said, you know, you guys should just get over yourselves.
At this time, before – like the beer will be tapped and gone before it even gets to any type of like legal registration where like – if you're going to get in trouble now, you're already going to get in trouble, so it doesn't matter. Or if you're not going to get in trouble, the beer is going to be gone in a second, and you're not going to get in trouble.
It's going to be gone. But one of the things that they pointed out in there, which I think it was Hill from Hill Farmstead, was saying, what if we made a wine and called it a California wine? It's like, well, I understand that, but you have the wine that is continuing as a product. This is just simply a one-off beer that is going to be gone. It's just where I guess I don't see why this is such a pain point.
Oh, you know what? I'd like to get on a soapbox for a second.
Go for it.
So I was trolling pretty hard yesterday.
Just a little?
A little?
I was on my troll roll, and somebody from Vermont said, I'm really frustrated because this whole New England-style IPA that is getting so much love – they're really Vermont-style IPAs.
Did it even originate
courtesy
there?
Of the Alchemist.
So this article came out shortly thereafter, but I said, you're right, but isn't Vermont in New England? To where this guy says, well, that's like saying reggae music started in the Caribbean, not in Jamaica. And then I showed him a map which showed Jamaica surrounded by the Caribbean Sea and said, source, colon, map. However, my thing is, you can't have your panties in a bunch both ways. Both because you're not getting the credit you think you deserve because people are calling something that you created. You won't let them call it yours. And then you get your panties in a bunch when they call it something else, but you want credit for it. So I am hereby boycotting all things Vermont for the foreseeable future.
This would seem like it'd be a state's rights issue, though, because, I mean, how would the state of Vermont go after another state's business Because this isn't a federal law. This is a state law.
You know what the precedent is? It's so the champagne yeah. in France. They did the same thing. They're like, California vineyards cannot call it champagne because it has to come from the Champagne. Those grapes have to be from the Champagne region. Yes, it's just silly.
It's a little silly.
And it even gets into – that's another thing that's happening in our industry is all the trademark wars because people are running out of names and they're running out of angles to market themselves because there's just so many players.
Well, we had Baffin on yesterday, and they actually have 3 cease and desists from breweries in the state of Michigan.
For what thing?
Good for them. So, keep going, guys.
So the first one was from Joe Short because of their name. Their original name for Baffin was Short Tail Brewing, which was their logo was a dog, hence Short Tail Dog, Short Tail Brewing. Changed it to Baffin, which was the name of the dog. I've said the name right of Baffin by the way.
I know. Credit.
It's like the Balkans. You use the right name.
So they also got one for – they did a collaboration with Moose Jaw, the company, the apparel company, and named it Trail Hopper. And Witch's Hat sent them a C&D for their train goodness. Hopper.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a big waste of money.
I agree.
And this is they were like, you know, this is a one-time brew, too. And they're like, we're not making this again, so whatever. Like, they there's a third one, too, that I can't remember.
My concern, though, is that people are saying, you can't call that ours because we didn't make it. But on the other end, we want credit for it. And you need to call it ours and give us the respect we deserve. It's like, well, we can – I mean, you just said in one breath we can't, and now you know, say we have to. So, like, which one is it?
I mean, it was just an ode to them and to their style, which is why they wanted to call it that. I mean, that's – and I don't understand why there would be, you know, that much static because, you know, they're doing – it's essentially a tribute.
If they add the word style – then right. there is no legal liability. If they say Vermont style – and they can actually do it.
Well, I think they just chose to be with winners and went the New England route as opposed to some bunk ass
New England farmhouse ale. Yeah.
Where is New England? Is that near Grand Rapids?
It's pretty close to New Amsterdam.
So wait,
it's just south of Lansing, Michigan.
There it is.
Because of Brexit, wouldn't England be now New England? The newest England?
In a way.
It would no longer be New England, is what you're saying. Because New England is now current England.
Current England, yeah.
So would it be Middle England?
Middle England.
Middle England.
Or England the second?
Adjacent England.
I want to go to past England.
England Junior and then England the third?
England the third.
Goodness. All right. One other thing I saw last week, which I was just kind of laughing my ass off about this one. I was looking around in some of the groups, and I noticed somebody was selling just various beers from Treehouse. And, you know, Treehouse with the whole, you know, Vermont IPA style craze.
Fuck Vermont.
It kind of got me wondering about, you know, the price of beer on eBay. Because, you know, you can sell anything on eBay, and especially beer, as long as you say that the cans are empty. And someone was selling, you know, 3 cans of Julius for, you know, $50 plus $12 to ship it. So I said, you know what, just for the hell of it. Considering it has become, you know, really popular around here from Old Nation, I decided to look up and see if I could find M43. And sure enough, there was a 4-pack of M43 that was sitting there. Somebody was selling it and wanted it at the buy it now price of $50. Now, granted, this beer just came out not, 2 months ago? And we've got somebody who was selling it up there saying it's as good as Trillium, as good as Treehouse, and it's still, for the most part, it hasn't gotten out of the area enough to really even get, I guess, that far out into their territory to be some sort of threat. Does that just seem wrong to be asking for $50 for a beer that really hasn't been proven yet?
It's stupid to ask $50 for beer. Period. Unless you're going to give me 4 cases.
Unless you're going to give me $50 worth of beer.
Yeah. Or you're going to give me 3 24-packs of Coors Light, name your macro beer. Or 2 cases of your, you know, six-pack bottles of beer.
This is the exact same thing you run into, and, you know, we're definitely going full circle with this, but with the music industry in regards to people purchasing tickets with the sole purpose of reselling. This guy didn't buy it to be like, oh, I don't want it anymore. No, he bought it to resell it. And at that point, it's one less four-pack in the hands of people that want it, and if he gets his money, good for him. Whatever.
I guess good for him, but I guess I look to you guys for being the ones who are making the beer. How, I mean, if say a six pack of Ghetto Blaster was up on eBay selling for 60
or
70 bucks.
You don't buy beer on eBay.
You can't buy beer on eBay.
You can, as long as the cans are empty, then, or at least they say in the listing that they're empty, eBay will not stop you from selling it.
So listen, boys and girls, sell empty cans of beer on eBay, and when you get sued, you can say I listed
hey,
them as empty.
I listed as empty. Exactly.
Can I have these four Boss Tweed cans when you're done? I have an idea. We're gonna start undercutting everyone on eBay. This guy sold me or gave me empty cans. Well, yeah, that's what you bought.
That's what you bought.
I thought you just wanted the cans to right. hang out.
Right. It was. I mean, I remember seeing a bunch of listings for KBS, and it was case of empty bottles in all caps of KBS. And it basically was like, you know, private message me for details. And, you know, it essentially was, yeah, I'm selling it, and there is beer. These are not empty. It's a full case.
Well, it sounds like a sting operation.
These are very depressing career moves.
Apparently, this is just, you know, how people today have to make their money.
Well, all three of them.
I want to be a stay-at-home beer trader. Beer seller.
That's is that like awesome. Stay-at-home like beer day. Trader. That's cool.
Yeah. Is that like a stock trader?
I just made $14 on eBay.
Buying and reselling beer.
Right. The 2016 State of the Michigan Brewing Industry Report came out a while, maybe a couple weeks ago. Actually, I just saw this the other day.
2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks ago? Okay.
The May-June issue of the Michigan Beer
Guide. Yes. Beer sales in Michigan rose 9.5% over 2015, achieving a market share of 8.9%, which went up from last year, but not a whole lot, only going up 0.3%. They had predicted that it would reach a 10% market share. Obviously, it did not make it. In total, according to report, there were 298 locations as either a brewer, which is four. You guys already talked about it earlier. 220 microbrews and 74 brew pubs. Within that 298, 53 of those licenses were new in 2016 and 11 closed or ceased brewing. Top 10 breweries from 10 to 1, including out-of-state sales, Jolly Pumpkin, Keweenaw, Griffin Clog, Dark Horse, Arcadia, New Holland, Atwater, Shorts, Founders, and then Bell's.
Remember, he said breweries, not craft breweries.
I did say breweries. It did not say craft breweries. And the article even pointed out the difference because of, you know, the BA rules on what is craft and what is not. In the microbrewery license group, top five, Shorts was number one seller, followed by Perrin, Atwater, New Holland, and Dark Horse. As far as brew pubs are concerned, top five were Rochester Mills, Grizzly Peak, North Peak, CJ's Brewery, and Royal Oak Brewery. I was kind of surprised about that one. One of the reasons that Michigan didn't hit the projected 10%, at least what they reported in there, was because several key producers put out less product, one of which being Shorts. They had asked Shorts why the numbers were lower and explained they were intentionally brewing less to decrease inventory to increase freshness to the consumer. Now, I guess the question is it possible with an approach like that for Michigan brewers to break 10% this year?
Why does it matter?
Let's ask the Michigan Brewers at the table.
We're not anywhere on any of those lists. Maybe we shouldn't be at this table.
Everybody should.
I get where Joe's coming from. I mean, it's an adjustment for everybody. You know, you can produce, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're selling.
And it's a perishable product.
Right. So, I mean, our whole category is based on freshness. So that's the balancing act. That's the challenge. Companies like Bell's and Founders, they've got throughput. Their stuff, you know, it moves.
Yeah.
But, you know, most breweries have the challenge of making sure all that stuff sells through. I mean, that's a big topic at the CBC meetings. You know, it's, you mm-hmm. know, if you've got a seasonal that didn't sell, don't discount it. Get it off the floor, you know.
Right.
Give it to your friends or destroy it.
I think it will get to 10%. You know, consumer bases are changing. More people are drinking craft beer. It's exponential. I think it's just going to take a little bit more time to get there.
Yeah,
I think Dan's point is true, and I think the demographic in Michigan is still changing. I mean, we're a blue collar state, and we have a lot of we've got a lot of golf courses, a lot of boats. We like our cans.
We have the most.
I drink PBR when I'm sailing.
Yeah,
I know a lot of my craft brewer brethren drinks PBR as well.
I mean, majority of all the beer is yellow beer that still. 90% of all the beers. Right. Yeah.
So I think it's a little bit of a generational thing. It's going to take a changing of the guard.
And I think we have not only the most public courses in the country, but we have the most registered bowlers in the country as well.
Yes, that too.
That's an interesting demographic.
Which is weird for the fact that there are a lot of bowling alleys that are still closing.
Yeah, I know.
for how many bowlers there, but again, bowlers are actually not even like we were talking loyalty, and I want to kind of circle back as we close out the show. Bowlers aren't even loyal to their bowling alley; like they'll go to whatever they have a league night that's available, wherever that's it's got the right place. Some of them can only go because of their average. I'm a bowler here, so obviously I know all these random. I'm not a good bowler, but I am a bowler. I know how to throw the ball, and I know the ball comes automatically back to me. And if not, then I hit the button that says ball stuck on lane.
Yes.
But, you know, talking about these beers, sure, Michigan craft beer is growing, and it's growing in a sense. But it's, you know, we don't just drink Michigan craft beer here. As much as we're hardcore Detroit, yes, if it's made in Detroit, I'm going to buy it. If it's made in Michigan, I'm going to buy it. We're still going to buy all of those seasonals from all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
The brewery, even Sam Adams.
Yeah.
We're looking for those those actual Vermont-style IPAs.
Yeah, or Le Fin du Monde, man. I've been drinking a lot of Unibrew.
We had Bernard on the show from
awesome
Unibrew.
Awesome brewery. Yeah.
I think, because I had to look at the report again, but I think the total barrels sold in the state was something like 67 million.
But again, at that point, there's like the fans, even if it's a Michigan beer, they'll still go after the newest beer that they've never had before.
Right.
Whether if they have a choice of a Michigan beer they've had and a new beer they've never had, they're going to go with the new beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as, of course, it's not made by ABI, or fake ABI or Miller Coors or whoever.
The High Road.
It's a lie. Everyone will be in line for Bourbon County.
As it is every year. The hypocrisy of the craft beer world is literally a show like that. It'll be me talking for 2 hours straight of how ridiculous it is. I do want to thank you guys for being on the show. We're closing up, and I do want to make a quick statement that we finally got the full funding for our scholarship. We did have another last-minute dropout, but the check is actually in my pocket for the 10th brewery. So we're going to be doing a $2,000 scholarship for Schoolcraft College. Thanks to Rich Weinkoff for matching our $1,000 donation. Thanks to all the breweries that have joined us. We've mentioned you multiple times, Farmington, Drafting Table, Atwater dropped. Baffin, who is now Atwater's replacement. North Center Brewing, Ellison, plenty more. The Michigan Brewers Guild even threw in $100. We threw in $100 of our own money. I still got to collect from you guys. So we're going to be giving away 3 scholarships for the fall semester. One that's $1,250, which is about a third of your entire all the money that you owe for the school itself. A second one that's $500 and a third that's $250. We're going to be doing this year after year. Hopefully we can get more money into the scholarship. But definitely check us out. Better on Draft on Facebook. Better on Draft on Twitter.
Better on Draft / MI Maps.
MI Beer Map.
MI Beer Map.
Yep. As well as Better on Draft Pod on Untapped. You can find us on all the social media. Instagram too. Nick's over at the Zoo Brew right now.
I hope
posting
he doesn't get
photos
kept.
Of penguins. And
I hope he doesn't get kept.
He's not going to get kept.
And
no.
Get one in there, didn't you?
I don't even think that's a short Joe. That's more like a hair. Have you seen his like chest hair? It's like the Italian V-neck style chest hair. So that's going to do it for us. Aaron, thank you so much for stepping up and getting these guys from Motor City Brewing Works.
Got it.
And no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Peace.